Wouldn't it be great to have your own small business, right? And when you have that small business, don't you need that support of a big business? Well, let Verizon help champion your small business dream, whether you own a small business or you're scaling one, or maybe even just starting one from scratch. You need Verizon Small Business Days. That's right. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon business experts for small business support. Paul, what does that mean? It means you can receive a free tech check with one-on-one meetings with a Verizon business expert. Plus, they'll give you personalized advice, solutions that are specific to your small business needs. And you know why? Because Verizon has your back. So don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business. Hey, everybody. Just wanted to give you a quick heads up here. There's something we should all be doing. It's going to improve your life, make every day a little bit better. And that is eat more Reese's peanut butter cups. Yes, think about it. All the gurus, all the coaches out there, they've never said the words, eat more Reese's. I mean, that combination of sweet chocolate and salty peanut butter. I mean, this is something that brings other people and ourselves joy. That's why there's two in a pack. Shop Reese's peanut butter cups now at a store near you, found wherever candy is sold and often in my pantry because I love these. How is your sock drawer looking? Maybe it's time for some spring cleaning. Well, Bombas just dropped soft new socks, tees, and underwear to help you get that drawer in a better place. And you know what? I just did it. Once you try Bombas, you are not going to look at socks the same way because they are obsessed over details. They have these anti-blister tabs and cushioned footbeds, so your feet feel great. It's like walking on little pillows. It's amazing. I love my Bombas. Get comfy this spring and give back with Bombas. Head on over to bombas.com/bonkers. Use the code bonkers for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/bonkers. Use the code bonkers at checkout.
What's up, jerks? Jason here with a very special How Did This Get Made announcement. Ba-ba-boo! We've got a tour coming up. That's right. First tour since 2019. Holy shit. I can't believe this. Do I want to go on tour? Not really. I'm still pretty scared. I'm still recording this from my closet. But nonetheless, we're coming your way. We're hitting the Midwest in August. What? The Midwest in August? That's going to be very hot and very humid. But nonetheless, we're doing it and we're doing it for you. So here we go!
August 12th in New Orleans at the Mahalia Jackson Theater for the Performing Arts. August 13th in Dallas, Texas at the Margot and Bill Winspear Opera House. Sunday, August 14th in Houston, Texas at the 713 Music Hall. August 16th in Indianapolis, Indiana at the Old National Center. August 17th in Detroit, Michigan at the Fillmore Detroit. August 18th in Northfield, Ohio at the MGM Northfield Park Center Stage. And August 19th in Chicago, Illinois at the Chicago Theater.
Tickets are on sale now. You can get them immediately. I would recommend you do it ASAP because this shit's gonna sell out. For more information and tickets, visit hdtgm.com. That is hdtgm.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a bonus episode of How Did This Get Made? Thank you all for listening and downloading Superman 3, our live episode from Largo. But you didn't hear the whole thing. That's right, there is more, hence the bonus episode. Today, you're in for a real treat because we have a special guest from Superman 1 and 2. That's right, Jack O'Halloran, who played Non, the stonily silent Kryptonian villain, came out to Largo when we were talking about Superman 3 and wanted to talk about Superman 2. Now, we thought, oh, sure, that'd be great. We'll have him up here. He'll talk about the movie. We did not realize how friggin' cool Jack O'Halloran is. This guy is a badass from a family that's the biggest crime family of all time. His father was the basis of the movie The Godfather. He's written a book about it called Family Legacy. It's out now on Amazon and I'm sure anywhere books are sold, which is becoming a rare thing. Anyway, he talks to us about some of the crazy experiences that he had not only on Superman, but on films throughout his career. This is a fun episode. I know that everyone at Largo, their jaws were just agape the entire time because Jack did not pull any punches at all. Now, without any further delay, our interview with Jack O'Halloran.
I want to bring out our special guest. This guy was not in Superman 3, thankfully. He was in Superman 1, Superman 2. He is one of the most badass villains of all the Superman movies.
More badass than Richard Pryor in this movie?
More badass than he did not create a supercomputer. He played the character of Non. Please welcome Jack O'Halloran. Woo! Woo! Well, we are very, very, very excited to have you, Jack. Jack is an accomplished actor, accomplished businessman, and now actually an accomplished writer. He has a book that you can get. It's called Family Legacy. And tell us a little bit about your book that you've written here.
It's can you hear me?
Yeah.
It's if you like The Godfather, you're gonna love this. It's
good. I like that. I'm in. I'm already sold.
I had a very famous father in New York by the man by the called Albert Anastasia, and he was the original Godfather. And so this story takes place. It tells about America and how industry and the government and the unions and organized crime were all partners for a long time. And so this book begins with my father's assassination in 1957 and ends with the Kennedy assassination in 1963. And we tell a lot of the truth about what happened in certain eras. And it ends with telling the truth of the Kennedy assassination.
So it's this
quite,
book
quite
has
an amazing this, book.
This, spoiler this, alert.
Yeah.
Major spoiler alert.
I want to read this now. We talked about this backstage. I'm like, I can't wait to read this book. It's going to be available on Kindle, and it'll be in your bookstores, yeah. Everything. This is amazing. But it's not purely nonfiction. You called it
fractional.
Fractional.
Yeah.
Because you would be murdered if you called it nonfiction.
No, I wasn't worried about that. I think the government was more worried than I was.
All right.
You are somebody that the government is worried about, correct?
Well, they knew about the lasers from Superman. What they didn't know, that all the powers were in the boots and they kept the boots, you know? Now I got to pay for airline tickets. What a bummer.
So now, Jack, I'm really interested because, obviously you're in Superman 2, and the question that I'm most interested in with Superman 1 and 2 is, Richard Lester kind of jumped on board. He's the guy who directed Superman 3. He kind of jumped on board in the middle of Superman 2, right?
Well, we had shot 1 and 2 together, and we had shot about 80% of 2. And Lester came on the set one day, and you knew something was amiss, you know? And Donner started getting very fidgety, and I said, I asked him, I said, what's the deal? He said, oh, no, he's just visiting. I said, no, the guy's looking around, he's doing this, he's doing that. I said, this is kind of funny. So I grabbed Elias Salkin one day, I said, what's the deal with Richard Lester? He said, no, well, we're just talking to him about Superman 3 and the blah, 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 and all this other stuff. And then I heard that they owed him a picture, and then someone said that he was going to come back and finish Superman 2. And nobody
in the middle of shooting, he just switched
they
over?
They created a habit. No, we stopped.
Okay.
We had to stop because they had to release Superman 1. Then we were going to come back and shoot finish too,
But when you came back, Donner was not there.
No, Donner wasn't there. And a lot of us, I wasn't going to go back, and a few other people weren't going to go back.
Yeah, it seems like everyone got pissed off. I mean, it seems like Everyone was mad about
it. Well, how do you replace, that's like replacing Muhammad Ali with Richard Pryor. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It would have been kind of funny. I mean, here's Ali coming to fight for the heavyweight championship of the world, and who comes and takes his robe off? Richard Pryor.
I would pay to watch that movie.
I would like to see that movie as well. Now, so did you get along with Richard Lester? Were you like...
Richard was a kind of a strange duck. To me, he was like a television actor. I'm a television director. I mean, the way he did things and the way he put a lot more comedy into things and stuff. And we wound up going back and shooting almost all the film again because the Directors Guild states that if you're going to put your name on a film as a director, you must shoot more than 50% of it.
Right.
Correct?
Right.
You should know that.
Absolutely.
And so instead of him just filling it in and finishing it, he got carried away, and he went all the way back and started and reshot a whole bunch of stuff, you know.
And did he make it worse, do you think?
Yeah. have you seen the Donner Cut?
Yeah, I saw the Donner Cut.
Donner Cut, if he would have been able to finish the movie the way he wanted to, this too would have been a blinder. And it was much more serious. There wasn't as much comedy in it. And Richard was like, I'll give you an instance, and as a director, you would appreciate this. They did the scene at the Eiffel Tower, yeah?
Yeah, and this began Superman 2, this
so
scene.
Now, this is the Salkinds, how wonderful. Now, this is a multi-million dollar film, right? Big time, you know? A lot of big people. They snuck into France as Annie Oakley.
As Annie Oakley?
A production called Annie Oakley, because they didn't want to pay a tax to France. And they're at the Eiffel Tower, and if you look at the scene in the movie... Look at the car windows. The window screens are going back and forth. It was raining, like okay. Serious rain. And you see the cop who's talking to Lois, Margot, spots hitting his shirt.
Right.
You know, and yet it looked like a sunny day. So what Richard did was, well, we're shooting this, and we'll just take it in the laboratory, and we'll fix it. And that's what he did with everything.
Wow.
Oh, just open up the lens and we'll just go and we'll go back and we'll just take care of it.
Well, no I mean, but I don't obviously.
And that was before CGI.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, obviously never met Christopher Reeve, but he is on record a few times ragging on Richard Lester. And he seems like the nicest guy in the world. He was like, he said he was always looking for a gag. I mean, sometimes to the point where the gags involving Richard Pryor went so over the top. I mean, I didn't think that him going off the top of a building on skis and a pink tablecloth around his shoulders was funny. Like, so this is Christopher Reeve, like, just even getting irritated with him.
Well, Lester had a, he was rather a strange individual. I mean, I've worked with a couple of bad directors in my career. the one guy, I think that Lester probably is the top of the list. I mean, he was kind of. He never came near me too much. I think right. He was afraid of me.
Yeah, you.
I cannot imagine why.
First of all, it should be known that you know you were a fighter. You were that's where you started, right?
I was a fighter.
I am.
I played
terrified
professional
of
you. Football, and I was my father's son.
Yeah.
You know, so I was a bit of a hooligan. And,
yeah.
And we did a scene. You know, one day, oh God, he almost had a heart attack. We did the shot where we come in the Daily Planet.
Yeah.
And I walked through that wall. Well, of course, you know, they scored it, and they had a jack that was supposed to come off and push the thing as I'm going through it. Well, the jack was delayed. I went through the wall on my own, and then the jack hit me in the arm.
Oh.
So, but we just kept on going. We filmed the whole scene. I filmed the scene, everything. Then I turned around. I was looking for the special effects guy, you know? I wanted to have a conversation with him. and Richard Lester
that guy
came
is
over
literally
and,
shitting his pants at that point.
He was running out the door. I swear to God.
I would never come back to work.
He didn't for 3 days.
I'd be like, I don't need this
for
job.
Three days.
And you know, and I said, you know, I just want to have a conversation. I was going to kill him. I
mean, right.
So, and Richard Lester said, well, now, Jack, you know, it was an accident. I said, let me put you there and stick your arm out, and we'll see how the accident feels on you. You're an ass, man. I mean, like, you know, get your shit together a little bit.
Now,
he was kind of a really, he was a strange dude.
How Did This Get Made is sponsored by Squarespace. That's right. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. With Squarespace, it's easy to create a beautiful website all on your terms. Now, let me tell you this. Now they have this Fluid Engine, which is a next-generation website design system where you can just drag and drop. It's so easy. It's so fun. Plus, they have this asset library so you can merge all your files from one central hub. I love it so much. Now, let me tell you. I talk about their customer support. I had an issue. Something went wrong. And not only did they get back to me in a timely fashion, but they solved my problem. They were attentive. And I have to say, regardless of anything else, sometimes the best way to judge a company is by their customer service, and Squarespace passed the Paul Scheer test. All right, so you could check out my website with a new feature. That's right. If you bought my book, you can sign up for that and you can get videos and pictures and all this kind of cool stuff. I built that on Squarespace. Check it all out. I love Squarespace. You will too. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/bonkers to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Here's the thing, people. Walmart Plus is the membership that saves you time and money on the stuff you'd expect, but also on the stuff you don't. Let me explain. Did you know with your Walmart Plus membership, you can save money on gas? Yeah, save gas while you drive the kiddos to soccer practice, plus visit your in-laws, plus venture into the wilderness, plus wherever you want to go. Because Walmart Plus also saves you time and money with free delivery, perfect for ordering new remote batteries or coffee when somebody finishes it without telling you. And then, you know, eats all your snacks that you have stored in the back of that pantry for movie night. How dare they? Plus, you can actually even save on the actual movies with a Paramount Plus subscription. Stream Top Gun Maverick, plus Mean Girls, plus Jack Reacher, plus so much more, because savings is what this whole Walmart Plus membership is all about anyways. Members save on gas, plus free delivery, plus Paramount Plus, plus so much more. Start a free 30-day trial at www.walmartplus.com. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions, $35 order minimum, Paramount Plus Essential Plan only, separate registration required. I recently went to the Telluride Comedy Festival, and I was sick and tired of staying in the same kind of cookie-cutter places, and I went on Airbnb, and I found a perfect spot for me and the family. We had an amazing time because we felt like home. Then I realized, wait a second, what if I could give that feeling to someone else? Yes! That's the best part. When you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. That's right. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who have never thought about it or didn't even realize that their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle, and you can make someone feel great and make a little bit of money too, because we all need a little bit of money. And maybe your talent or your gift to the world is having a killer place. So if you have a home, but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Now, did you get along? I've read one thing here, and I don't want to lead you into it if you don't want to talk about it, but did you and Christopher Reeve not get along a little bit? Or
Christopher was, you're talking about a 26-year-old guy with a 16-year-old brain.
Okay.
Who had never done anything in the film industry before. The only thing he ever did was Love of Life.
Right.
And he carried a spear in a Katharine Hepburn play. That was his claim to fame. And he was a Juilliard graduate, you know. And when he came on the set, he was 170 pounds soaking wet. So we grabbed they brought a coach in to build him up muscles and shit like that. And I said, you know, you don't want to bulk him up really big. If you want to do this right, do a George Reeves. Get him up about 190 pounds with real good cuts. And when he puts a costume on, it'll look terrific. Because he wouldn't wear a plate. He wanted to be
his body.
Christopher Reeve, you know. And he used to walk around like Superman. I mean, poor Mark McClure was such a nice young kid, you know. And he's in his room playing his guitar one day. Hey, Chris, come on in and listen to my new song. You will talk to me as Superman.
Oh, wow.
And you are Jimmy Olsen.
Wow.
Wow, man. Poor kid got the tears, right? So,
at which point you have to say, well, I'm going to kick Superman's ass. Well,
yeah, you're none.
I'll tell you what happened. Yeah. We used to go in town. A dear friend of mine owned a restaurant called San Lorenzo on Beecham Place, Italian guy from Italy. And a great restaurant. And I used to take the whole cast in there and got everybody in the habit of eating. Because I do favors, bring people in. So.
Yeah.
So we're in there. I get a phone call one night. And Lorenzo, the owner, says to me, Jack, how well do you know Christopher Reeve? I said, I just work with him. Why? Well, he's in here talking about you and being a gangster and your father and all this stuff from New York.
Whoa.
And I said, what did you say? He said, well, he's telling all these people that, boy, what a gangster this guy is and everything else. And I said, really? So I now go to work the next day, and I'm a little bit perturbed. And I'm waiting for him. And I said, and Richard Donner said, what's the matter, Jack? And I said, oh, nothing. I just would like to have a word with Chris when he comes in. Is everything okay? I said, no problem. So he comes to work, and I said, hey, Chris, come here, I want to talk to you. And I took him into a dressing room, and I said, how well do you know me, young man? He said, well, I just, you know, what people. I said, let me tell you something. If I ever hear you mention my name outside of this studio or anywhere else without saying Mr. First, I'm going to rip your head off and piss down your throat.
Right.
And if I ever hear you talk about my family or anything from my past that you have no idea what you're talking about,
yeah,
you won't finish this picture.
Okay.
So he got very kind of sheepish and
yeah,
scared, and he slunk out of the room, and I followed him out. Once he got outside and there was a crowd, he all of a sudden got bravado. You can't talk to me that way. I said, what did you just say? Who do you think you are? And I grabbed him and I picked him up off the ground by his throat, and I had just put him against the wall, and I was just about to kick
as one is
the shit
to.
Out of him, man. And Richard Donner grabbed my arm, and he said, not in the face, Jack. Not in the face. So I dropped him on the floor and I almost wet myself laughing. You know? And here's Dick Donner shaking like a leaf. Oh my God, we're stuck for a month. And I said, the kid, he walked rather sheepishly after that. But,
yeah.
He was a funny kid. You know, he, like I said, he was 26 year old in a 16 year old brain. But he grew up on Superman, you know, you'll never get a better Superman or Clark Kent than he did.
I think he's amazing. In that Superman 3, he really holds it together. He's
as
great.
An actor, he was brilliant. He did the role terrifically. And I don't think they'll ever find a better one. I really don't. And it's sad that they didn't do the 10 like they were supposed to do.
Oh, wow. They're going to do 10
They were
movies?
Supposed to do 10 of them. And they were going to keep up with Indiana Jones and all that stuff.
Okay.
And he,
after
Superman 2, Chris became an actor and thought he really could act.
Then he didn't want
to. He wanted to do this and he wanted to do that. And then the Salkinds, they were kind of weird people, man. I mean, when you do Superman 3, why would you? I mean, I don't know how Warner Brothers allowed it, to be honest.
Yeah,
with you.
They worked outside of the studio system, essentially.
I don't know what you mean. That movie made total sense to me. You're acting
Which
like
kindergarten
that.
School did you go to?
I didn't graduate kindergarten.
Now, I feel like you have the plum role in all the Superman movies because not only do you have this badass kind of character, but at the same time, you work with Marlon Brando, you work with Gene Hackman, you work with Terrence Stamp. Like, you get to do all these great scenes with all these guys. And it seems to me, from the stories I heard from you backstage and out here, there's a wild time on this movie. This is like...
We had a lot of fun. You're talking about some class people. And Terrence Stamp is an incredible actor, an incredible individual. You know, Terry...
Do you ever have to set him straight? Terrence Stamp?
Terrence and I were good friends. Terrence is a very pompous English guy. I mean, really, but his brother managed The Who.
Okay.
And Terrence went through his own problems. Then he went to India and he got very spiritual and he got guru'd and grothed and straightened out. And he's a great actor.
Yeah, he's great.
Terrence is a great actor. And Sarah Douglas is a trip. She's a really super lady. The cast was brilliant. I mean, you couldn't get a better cast than we had.
Amazing.
Gene Hackman. I just finished a picture with Hackman called March or Die. And when they came to me to ask me if I would do Superman, because I had turned down the Bond movies, and they came.
Do they want you to be Jaws?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, they came to me. I did Farewell My Lovely, and it worked out really well. It was a great picture. And then we did King Kong, and the second worst director I ever worked with.
Really?
John Gillerman, you. John Gillerman was a trip. I mean, when he was sober, he was okay a little bit. But he was a gas, man. I mean, this is a great story. You got to tell a story. We're in Hawaii. I mean, a lot of you people, you work overtime in your job and all, you know, it's good. You get nice overtime. It's great. You get a little bonus. We're in Hawaii on location. Now, we were supposed to go to Hawaii for 3 days. Of course, we were there for 33 days. And, because John was a sailor. We shot that the fog scene.
Right.
Right? We were supposed to be shooting that in Hawaii, right? And they just couldn't get the weather correct for him. And John, of course, being a sailor, said, well, we're going to do it today. And the weather guy said, John, this is not a good idea. There's a storm coming. You'll never get the shot down. And, sailor boy, you know?
Right.
So we go to work on a Sunday. Yeah. You'll love this. We go to work on a Sunday. Yeah, we worked 15 hours. Now, this is double golden time for people, for money. This is a great money. Money day was perfect. Yeah. 15 hours. We had 7 straight meal penalties. And we never turned the camera over.
You never turned the camera on once?
Never turned it over once. No. He wasn't very happy. And to start his day off, it really didn't do him a lot of good was, he had this box, like a cooler, and he stuffed it with beer and he had a lock on it. So he would stand there and drink beer in front of a crew and it's hot and you're in Hawaii, you know what I mean? And these guys are all looking at him. Some poor guys, they had a little problem drinking. They like drink a little beer maybe. And then they're watching this guy, and they're standing there sweating. They're going, how do we kill him now? Or do we? They were trying to figure out how to break into his box, you know? So we're going to do this long jaunt on the boats one day on this Sunday. And I stopped at the store, and I bought 4 cases of beer, and I brought them down. I left them on the sand, and I said, this is for the crew for your lunch break or your break. Yeah. And John said, well, they can't have that on the set. I said, well, John, what are you drinking? Are you any different than anybody else out there? Well, you know, that's not you. You just can't do a thing like that. And I said, really? I said, well, there's a Teamster. Bring him over and tell him that I can't do what I just did. Tell him to tell me I can't do it.
Yeah.
So and the crew said, oh, yeah, man, oh, yeah. So we supplied the crew with beer for them. You know?
Well, I don't want to monopolize you guys. Do you have any questions about it?
Yeah, I guess the question that I would love to ask you is, so the ending of Superman 2, so we have this sort of final showdown in the Fortress of Solitude, and Superman begins to demonstrate powers that he have never been established before or since. He can take the ass off of his chest and throw it and snare people with it. He can.
You get ensnared by it, as a matter of fact.
That was brilliant, man. Exactly. That was a blind shot.
Right. And
I thought David Beckham came to play.
He can also teleport or create illusions
of
himself.
Like 5 of himself.
So, first off, was this Donner Lester?
Well, that was Lester.
Uh-huh, okay.
That was a little Lester. And then if you look at the shot closely, it's not Hackman. You only see back doors of Hackman and somebody carrying him and stuff. And Gene didn't come back to do that picture.
He did. So he just walked off when Richard Lester got it.
Whatever had been shot of 2 with Hackman, that was it.
Well, I mean, let's look at 2-3 things in Superman 2, which was a great movie. But just think of how great it could have been. How do you cut Brando out of a picture?
Yeah, he replaced it with Superman's mom.
How do you cut Brando out of a picture?
Yeah.
I mean, there's 20 minutes that you'll see in the Donner cut of Marlon Brando, and they cut him out of Superman 2.
Did they pay him for that?
That's why they cut him out.
Wow.
So he got paid 1 salary. They didn't want to pay him again, so they cut him out. But
can you just tell us how he was paid?
They paid him 4 years before the picture ever took. They started in Italy, and they paid him $11 million in gold.
In gold.
4 years before he went to work. That's not a bad gig.
Gold.
You know? In gold. Gold. Yeah. Well, he didn't think their checks would pass. He didn't want to.
Right, yeah. So
he knew the stories of the salt guys.
But they bounced checks on you, as a matter of fact.
They didn't bounce them. What they did was they wrote you a check that was nondescript, had no numbers on it. So it would have to physically go back to the bank in Zurich and sit there until they felt like clearing it.
Oh.
So they just bought themselves time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you didn't react well to that.
Not at all.
Do you seem like...
You know, I had a...
You seem like the kind of guy who would take something like that and just let it slide.
You know, I had this great conversation with Pierre Spangler. I said, you know, I come here to go to work, and I don't bother anybody, and I do my job, and you pay me. That's what that contract that I signed says, yeah? Yeah, so we had a very nice conversation in his office one day. And I was the only one on the set who ever had, I got paid on time every week. After.
I don't know if you heard this about me, but I picked up Superman by the neck and we weren't shooting the movie.
You demonstrated
the fact we almost didn't have a movie to shoot.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you were saying it was in the Superman book. You picked up Pierre Spengler by the neck too.
Yeah. Well,
that's like your move, isn't it?
You know, you do something when you work on a movie and you're a principal. And if you're going to go away or get on an airplane, you're really supposed to tell people because, you know, if anything happens to you, my God, they're stuck. And that goes back to, I never forget the first picture I ever did. I was doing the first shot I'd ever did on a picture with Robert Mitchum. And we're in Farewell, My Love. And we're standing up there and he's telling me about the camera, and he's teaching me about the people behind it. And he said, you see that little red light there, son? I said, yeah. He said, well, when that goes on, he said, they all work for you. All those clowns behind there, they can be replaced. You're on celluloid, so you're the boss.
Because the crew of this movie was clowns.
Oh, yeah.
So when Richard Lester got in, he was
just circus clowns.
So, you know, it's... When you do a picture, you're supposed to be responsible, which I was. But I got a little dull over there. It was raining for a few weeks in a row. So I got on a plane. I flew back to California one weekend because they had this great plane. I could come home for a couple of days, and I could be there at 7 in the morning on a Monday morning and go to work. And I get into Beverly Hills. I call my accountant. I said, well, I'm home. I got all these things I want to do. Boy, I must have so much money in the bank. And she said, you have a lot of paper. I said, what? I've worked 8 weeks. She said, you got a lot of paper. No money, paper. So I got, they didn't have cell phones in those days. So I go to the outside of the Beverly Hills at the drugstore and I get on a pay phone. I call Pierre Spangler and Pinewood Studios. And he accepts the plane call. And he said, well, what are you doing in California? And I said, well, I got a problem here. Anyway, so long and short of it is they put the money in my bank, and I flew back, and I met Spangler when I come in the morning, and we walked up into his office, and I said, geez, I'd really like to have a word with you. And he just came back from explaining to Alexander why he had to send this money to California to me. And he got behind his desk, and I just grabbed him and pulled him across the desk. And we looked very close at each other, and I said, you know, I'll tell you what. I come to work, and you pay me. And that's the way the rule works. I said, you know, and if you don't know about me, I suggest you pick up a telephone and call some people because I really act very nicely on over here. I don't bother nobody or anything, but you should call New York and ask about me because you're just about to go back to my city and shoot film. And if you do this to me one more time, I promise you, when you go to New York, I'm going to drop you in the Hudson with a camera on your head. And I dropped him in his seat, and he looked at me and said, you're threatening me. And I said, no, I solemnly promise you. I absolutely promise you, without a doubt.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by the news? Well, you are not alone. Listen to Love It or Leave It, hosted by former Obama speechwriter and comedian John Lovett. As a former White House staffer, he is no stranger to political chaos. But don't worry, that doesn't mean he's keeping a cool head in today's chaos-filled news cycle. Far from it. It is the only show where you hear Golden Globe winner Greta Lee give award-worthy readings of listener mail and Kathy Griffin go off on all things MAGA. Hold tight to your sanity and listen to Love It or Leave It wherever you get your podcasts.
Jack, when was the first time you picked up somebody by the neck? How do you even know that you can, that you could, it just seems difficult.
Just the physics of it.
I
had like a real warped sense of humor when I was a kid, you know. I was 12 years, 13 years old, and these people were teaching me how to follow my father's footsteps. And I hung around. I was
at 12 or 13.
I was 12, you're about 12. I started growing really a lot in this period.
Your father, who is the basis of The Godfather and of this book, Family Legacy.
Yeah, my father was a pretty... my father ran some little company in New York called Murder Incorporated.
That's a tiny startup.
Yeah, he was kind of a serious guy, you know. A nice fella, but, you know, he didn't want to make him angry, you know.
LLC, right?
So I used to, you know, if you were an adult and you really made me angry or something when I was a kid, you know, I would send all these mass cards to your house and your family and your neighbors, and I hand delivered them so they couldn't say that I did anything through the post. I would hand deliver them to your mailboxes, you know, and people would get a mass card. Oh my God, he died.
Announcing the person's death.
Oh yeah.
That you were
Wow. Wow.
That's pretty bold.
I was
I'm not gonna lie, I am terrified of you. You terrified.
And when I was 14, I did a really good one, man. I sent a big black reef to somebody one time.
Both of these you did before you were 15 years old.
Oh yeah.
And they are better than the horse's head in The Godfather.
Well, they never actually cut the horse's head off. What this real story is, they gelded.
Because it's based on a real story.
Him. Oh, yeah. They gelded the horse and put his balls under his pillow. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Way more frightening. Yeah. Boy, I would rather a horse...
Well, he was very angry because the horse was out to make a lot of money as a stud.
Because he was a stud?
Yeah, it was a great horse, yeah.
Wow.
Great horse.
But he pissed off the Pope of Greenwich Village.
Wow.
Do you guys have any questions for Jack?
I'm scared.
So many questions.
I mean, we were talking about this backstage. Jack was called by Muhammad Ali to make sure to basically punch out his brother so he would never fight again,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, man. I came to California. I was back east. I was in New Jersey.
The show's only half over, guys.
And they called me. I was in New Jersey, and they called me on the phone. They said, you want to fight Kenny Norton? And I said, when? They said, next week. I said, where's the ticket? The guy said, you actually take the fight? I said, yeah. Well, I had 16 indictments against me for union problems. So I figured,
union
what a great
problems.
Time.
Murder, Inc. Yeah. Murder, Inc. wasn't filling out the tax
problems.
Forms.
Now, we have a few little problems. So
16 of them.
Yeah.
Under federal indictment?
Yeah.
Huh? Fair enough. I'll be honest with you. I have 3 traffic tickets right now.
All parking. They're all parking, though.
They're all parking. They're all meters, expired meters. I don't want to brag.
No speeding tickets.
I'm pretty tough, Jack.
You want to hear a parking joke story, man? I'll tell you. It's just a true story.
Of course I do. Of course I do, especially if it's true.
I was training in Philadelphia.
Does this involve you throttling a traffic policeman?
I lived in New Jersey, and I was training in Philadelphia, you know, and I used to have to come over to Waltman Bridge every day, and I would park my car anywhere I wanted to. And they kept putting these things on there, and I kept throwing them under my seat. So I never paid attention to it, you know.
Why would you? Well, I never paid attention to the law anyway.
So I'm coming from my house one day, and I'm coming up Broad Street in South Philadelphia, and two cars come over, and they single me, pull over there. So I didn't do anything wrong, so I pull over, and I'm on my way to the gym. So I pull over, and the guy, they corner my car in, they locked it in, and the guy gets you out of your car, and he said, it's a scofflaw, we're commandeering your car over traffic warrants. I said, what did you say?
And you're like,
I'm starting to get very angry.
Word with you.
I'm really starting to get really mad.
I love that you're mad at the cops.
And the cop and the regular cops walking down the street on his patrol, and he knew who I was. So they grabbed the cop right away. They said, come down here, officer. We're taking this man's car. We want you to be here. And they went through this whole rigmarole, and they leave. They give me a thing, subpoena. I got to go to court to see this judge and all this other jazz. And they're going to take my car and all this stuff. So they leave, and the cop looked at me. He said, Jack, he said, if you'd have hit them, I just would have turned my back and went around the corner. You know, and I said, wow. So anyway,
Jack, you're allowed to punch police in this town. Listen, you know that, right?
So I go.
I'm condoning it.
They make a meeting for me to go to City Hall and see this judge.
Please tell me you punch a judge.
Traffic judge.
Please. No. Please tell me this story ends with you punching a judge.
This guy was great. They gave me an envelope.
Permission to approach the bench, Your Honor.
He gave me a.
Just lean over here.
He gave me an envelope to give to him, you know, and I sat down and had a conversation. He looked at me and he said, you may be the future heavyweight champ of the world, kid. He said, but you are the heavyweight champ of my traffic court. I think I had $7,000 in fines.
What?
And he said,
And this is in an era when traveling tickets were not that
much. Oh, they were zero.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
I mean, 7,000.
You had to have a stand.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So he said, I don't ever want to see your name come across my desk again. And I said, I have to really apologize. I said, I thought that I was parking legally all the time, and these people, I thought they were picking on me because I was New Jersey tags on my car. And it cost me $150. I had to leave the courtroom. It was terrible.
That's it?
That's it.
Hey,
that's
you know, it? You ever 150? Take, you know what it's like to take money out of a street kid's pocket, man?
I don't.
You were the heavyweight champ.
Not a good idea.
I keep trying, and they get away.
Let me tell you.
holy shit, Jack.
So,
I have to
it's a great book. You're going to really like it.
I mean, if these stories are any indication of the life that you have lived.
We're just about to make
it. Scarier than your character.
It's I'm scared scary. Of reading this book.
You'll like it a lot more.
We actually have a couple copies that we are going to be able to give out to people here in the crowd, and then maybe we can get you to sign one. We'll send one off to a winner of the podcast. So we'll do something like that. But this book is out now. If you're listening to this, it's out now, and you can get it on Kindle. You can get it in the bookstore. And
what's it called?
It is called Family Legacy. And man, I'm ready. I'm down with this.
The spoiler alert is
you know you find out who kills Kennedy.
Yeah.
So that's
not a spoiler alert. That's just a thing in the book.
And it's not General Zod.
And it wasn't Ursa either.
No, Ursa. So give it up for Jack. Thank you so much. Huge fans. Very huge fans. Good up to Damon Lindelof for coming out. Thank you so much. That has been How Did This Get Made? We'll see you next time. Bye-bye. Oh, okay. Thank you guys so much for coming out. We are going to be selling t-shirts out there. We'll have copies of Jack's book. Here's the thing. We found out that Nick Cage is pretty litigious, and we need to get rid of our t-shirts. So, if you haven't seen them, they have a big picture of Nick Cage on it. It says, Ridiculous Cage. If $20 is burning a hole in your pocket, let's get them now. Get them now.
But if you wear them around town, he might sue.
So,
See what these guys are going to do? They're going to do something like guys in San Diego did to me. If you don't buy a t-shirt, they're going to send me over to see you at your house.
Yeah.
And we will, and we'll Jason, June, and I, will sign. We'll sign. We have stuff out there.
I won't. No, thank you.
All right. Thank you guys so much for coming out. You've been great. And, would you be up if we did it again, maybe, in January? All right, cool. We'll do another one. All right, thank you guys so much. Good night. Holy shit! Jack O'Halloran is the man. I got to tell you, you have to go and look at the video of this on earwolf.com just to see that this guy, he still looks like he can crush us all. I was waiting for him to maybe just turn on Jason and just break his neck. I thought Jason maybe have been pushing him in the wrong direction, but he didn't. It was great. Jack O'Halloran, of course, has a book out, Family Legacy, which is awesome. It's kind of like The Bourne Supremacy meets The Godfather. It's a really quick read, and
It's great. He reveals who killed Kennedy in the book. Come on, what other book can you give somebody for Christmas that goes, hey, by the way, we know who killed Kennedy? Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next week for a mini-episode.
Hey, it's Jason Mantzoukas wishing Scott and everybody else of all stars and stripes a happy 15th anniversary, Comedy Bang Bang. You goddamn did it. Eat shit. Hang on, man.